If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the living love that is all that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is, You Already Are Everything You Seek to Become. But are you living now? So if you're ready, sit up straight, take a deep breath, and call yourself forward in your integrated wholeness. Bring that eternal part of you present here and now. You don't have to seek it. You are it. Just bring yourself fully present, and that shows up. It's very easy to make the contact when you take a deep breath and purpose that you will integrate. You call yourself forward into it. It's a choice that we all can make every second of our life. Is a choice to be alive or not. So who are you? Who are you? Where are you? Right now, where are you? Are you conscious of being? If someone came up to you and asked you if you are alive now, how would you respond? Would you laugh and say, "Of course I'm alive. What do you mean?" Or would you get all huffy and say, "What a stupid question. Do I look like I'm dead?" So Sai Baba has a very, very intriguing statement that it's taken me many, many years to awaken to that meaning. Not that that's necessary, okay? It just took me that long. Some of us can get these things right away, and some of us don't. But it's always perfect whenever we realize whatever it is we realize. Life is lost in dreaming. Interesting, huh? What does that mean? Well, to Sai Baba and all the enlightened masters, the life that we think we're living right now is a dream. Nothing that you see when you open your eyes, turn on the television, look on your computer screen, look out the window, travel all over the world, nothing you see is anything but a dream. It's a mental interpretation we make moment by moment as we move through the illusion of time-space. At nighttime, same thing, all dreams. Where do these dreams come from? They come from the mind. They come from no place but the mind. The ego mind, which is a false dream of separation. So everything the ego mind conjures up is false. And so we lose life, that that sense of being alive and present and vital and joyous and full of energy, full of zest and zeal and tingling with vitality. That intense life, which is really God, and our true authentic self, that aliveness is lost in dreaming. So when a realized person who is fully awake looks into the eyes of most human beings, it's like there's a veil. I can recognize it as the mind. Very different look in the eyes of a person who is sound asleep and looking into the eyes of Sai Baba, which I have from about 12 inches away from him, or my teacher, John Roger. I remember looking into his eyes right after he initiated me, and they were like silver blue cosmic vortices. And one time in a training that MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, was giving, I focused upon a video where they were showing, or not a video, a frozen picture of John Roger. And I thought, you know, I'm going to dive into those eyes because they're dimensional portals to God, to reality, to truth. And so I did. I projected myself directly into his eyes. And I went to a state of consciousness where I couldn't speak. I couldn't continue doing the processes of that workshop. And the person that was working with me across from me in a process was a very, very dear close friend. And I couldn't hold back the power of that presence that was present at that time in this body that's speaking to you. And it went into her and put her into a similar state to where she had to go and lie down on the floor of the seminar room. And I realized, you know, my time for doing these workshops is over. I can't play games anymore of becoming. I am. So you can use your own eyes, but I would suggest you take the picture of your master or Sai Baba or Lord Jesus or Ramakrishna or any one of the Amaji, any one of the enlightened beings that you feel drawn to. Put that photograph up there and stare into those eyes. Use them as dimensional portals. Because an awakened master, you can enter as a dimensional aperture to your own immortality. And so the eyes are tremendous. Do you know the sacred geometry for an eye? And the sacred geometry that depicts light is the same configuration. So eyes tell you everything. I can look into a person's eyes, and when they're caught up in the dreams of the mind, the ego mind, there's like a dullness, like a film there. And you want to, at least I do, you want to just reach in and pull that veil away. But you can't do that for a person any more than you could save a butterfly by going in and cutting it out of its cocoon. There's a time of the maturation, which takes a little while, as all things take when they're ripening. But you know, the actual ripening itself is instantaneous. And when that occurs, the awakening occurs. And it's quick. In fact, Sai Baba said it's not sequential. These consciousness moves that we seem to be in now, the final coup de grace, if you will, is going to be a quantum leap. It's sudden. Enlightenment is sudden. Ripening is sudden. You look at a rose, one day it's just a little closed up bud. Next day, whoa, it's out. It's bloomed. It's blossomed. And we're like that too. And you have no idea how many lifetimes has brought you to the moment that you can hear what we're sharing tonight. You're ready to hear it, or you would not be listening. And what that means is that you're ready to truly let the veils of illusion fall away. That's the real meaning of the word apocalypse. It's the unveiling of that which has kept the truth hidden. But I'm not talking about the kind of truth that changes today and changes tomorrow with opinions and the news. That's not truth. That's more ego mind projection. Truth is only that which is completely unchangeable. You can't add to it, you can't improve upon it, you can't change it. It has no beginning or end. So, you yourself are the truth. You are an embodiment of truth. And that's why, if you were in a circle of people and they were doing muscle testing, very interesting process. In fact, take a friend some time and muscle test them. You can Google it, find out how to do that. And you'll find out that if you ask them a question and they tell you a lie, they'll go weak. Immediately, they'll go weak. And when they tell the truth, there is no way you can push their arm down as hard as you push. So truth is its own support. It needs no defense. If it needs defense, it's of the mind and it's not truth. So know that. Because you don't fix things that aren't broken. You don't add to what's already there and perfect. When you try to fix something that's already perfect, you're affirming a false state of brokenness. And you are every bit whole, which the root word of whole also is the root word for healing and holiness and shalom. When you say shalom, you're actually stating to that person or asking them, are you whole? So, again, shalom is the Hebrew word for peace. And the presence of peace is the absolute proof of truth. The divine hi-fi is always a feeling of peace. Isn't that interesting? We get all worried and concerned trying to decide what to do, this or that, or what decision should I make. Make the one which settles in you as peace. And you'll never go wrong. So peace is a purely spiritual divine state that absolutely cannot be present when there's the false. It cannot. You can feign a type of, attachment, affection, lust, and pass it off as love. But you can't do that with peace. You can't fake peace. Peace is like pregnancy. It's either 100% or it's none at all. So life is lost in dreaming. And when you examine dreams, and I think we have to examine our life and the states of consciousness we move in with as much intensity as a scientist would be examining a specimen under a microscope. We just have to have that level of intense focus and inquiry. And not just live on automatic pilot like most people do. So life is lost in dreaming. The mind invents stories. It invents names and forms and plots and plans and false identities, to where we begin to limit our unlimited omnipresence and say, when somebody asks who you are, you say your name and what you do for a living and that you're a mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, whatever, whatever. And that's all stories that the ego mind suggests that you identify with. So every story that you make up comes out of the mind. I don't care how grandiose it is, it's fake. It's false. You cannot limit yourself to being a human being in a physical body on planet Earth. I mean, you can, people do, but you'll get over it. You'll outgrow it. So being is lost in becoming. Now, what in the world does that mean? Your being is omnipresence, okay? It's absolute life, full-blown, eternal, ever-expanding, ever-full, ever-whole, ever-perfect, timeless. Timeless. That's you. That's being. Now, when you go into becoming, you get lost in the wheel of cause and effect and time. Time is an illusion. It rises nowhere but as a perception in the human brain, in the mind. It's hard to say exactly where you would locate, because it is false. So why look for something that's false? So being is lost in becoming. We make ourselves frantic trying to attain what we've been forever, trying to change what is inherently perfect, trying to become a false identity that we're just going to have to let fall aside at some point. But notice how the stress arises whenever you effort and strive to become. Now, I'm not talking about a worldly skill like surfing or horseback riding or becoming an Olympic athlete. Those are physical, bodily dreams. We could call them happy dreams. But, you know, it's very possible, and this is the time for it, to be fully alive, fully awake, to live beyond the machinations of the ego mind, to live in a state of life, fullness of life, and conscious being, even while you do these other things. That's like the yoga of life, where you're yoked with your divinity all the time. You don't lose sight of it. Every moment is a yoga. Every action you're involved with is your spiritual practice. And you practice conscious godhood all the time, all the time. You never lose sight of it. I am, I am, I am, I am. Soham, soham. So every time you get caught up in the ego story, you're going to try an exercise in futility and frustration, because you're in the illusion of time and distance and space and becomingness. Just be attentive to that. Be aware of that. So you already are, right now, all you seek to become. But this is lost sight of by the mind keeping you searching in the world to find yourself, to find your purpose, to find your identity, to achieve something. And this leads to your being in a constant state of discontent. It keeps you from experiencing fulfillment now. to all becoming. All ambition, all lusting after and desiring for and fearing and I'm not going to have enough, or I'm going to be losing, or whatever. These are all stories that the ego mind projects that you identify with, and it creates a self called the unhappy self. The unhappy self with its stories. I mean, you hear these stories all the time. You ask people how they're doing, or, you know, how did they hurt their leg, or this or that or the other thing, and they immediately have the story. Very few people are awake enough to where they say, I'm not my body. I'm not my mind. I'm not the name of this body. I'm not identified with the what is done through this bodily instrument. I am the awakened one. I am life itself. I am pure being. And so the minute you rise in meditation or soul transcendence, where you identify yourself instead of with the personal story, you identify yourself as the soul, you are able, through spiritual practice, to raise your consciousness above the mind. And every time you do, you feel incredible relief. You literally stop the world. You literally die to the world. And you enter that realm of complete fullness, fulfillment, and peace. Now again, you can live an ordinary life, go to the ballpark with your kids, eat your hamburgers, whatever, do life, and be in that state. It's not a weird thing we're talking about. It's not where you have to leave this world and go off and somewhere in the ashram or the caves. Get it. You've done there. You've been there. You've done that. That's why you're interested to listen to me, because I've been there and done that too. And today I'm living in Los Angeles, you know, right in the middle of the happenings. And I love it. I love the hustle and bustle of life. I've got a dog next door that barks and barks and moans and barks. It's not barking tonight. That's a good thing, because it was raining. So he's in the house. But normally, it's as if he were sitting right by my chair, because, you know, I have the window right next to where he lives. And you know, he doesn't bother me at all. I don't know why. I can go into the deepest meditation and I don't even notice him. Why? Because I'm in that level above the mind. The mind is always judging, complaining, criticizing, finding fault with everything. It's never content. You can never please the ego mind. So what I'm saying is that you can live in a state of absolute equanimity and peace and happiness and aliveness right where you are. I don't care if you have 10 kids screaming and pulling on you. You can be one with that loving flow that emanates from a person who's centered and simply present and addressing what's present. Yeah, I've raised children. Yeah, I've been in situations that would make your hair raise. But I know from personal experience that what you experience is inside yourself, and it has absolutely, believe it or not, has absolutely nothing to do with what's happening in the outer. So the minute you quit fighting and resisting what is, the minute you acknowledge that it's absolutely perfect at this moment, and you don't seek to change it, well, you've entered the ranks of the awakened. Yeah. That's how a yoni, a person who's realized the self, behaves. They don't want anything to be different from the way it is. They don't want to change and mess with other people. They don't want to interfere with events. They take it as it comes. They accept it and welcome it and find a way to bless it. I mean, they don't have to find a way to bless it. They are the blessings. They're beyond, you know, a doing. Their very state is a blessing. And that's the state of being that we're talking about. It's not a doing. It's not something that you have to effort into. It's the natural state that you present when you've allowed the false identifications to go bye-bye. You don't fight them. You just keep turning the light of your awareness on, and all the shadows recede. So every time you look with great scrutiny and great intense interest in anything, I don't care what it is that you focus on with that intention, that interest, it will reveal the light that it is to you. It will reveal the heart of truth. That's why sometimes when you're reading a book, hopefully by an enlightened master, certain things will all of a sudden light up for you. It's like, bam, you suddenly get it. And it's that spark of instant knowing that everyone experiences when they come to the truth. There's no feeling of wishy-washy, well, I don't know if that's true, you start doing your ego dance. No, there's none of that when you're hit with the truth. I mean, there could be. But if you're ready to hear it, there won't be. There'll be no questions. There'll be no doubts. It will settle in you with a solidity and a certainty that nothing can budge. Because it has been recognized by the all-knowing self that you are. There is nothing you don't know. Nothing. Now, you've had all the experiences you need to have. You see, many, many people think, oh, I'll just take another seminar. I'll just go to India and visit this guru, and I'll take his program. I'll just go get initiated by so-and-so. When I retire, there won't be all this noise and confusion and jobs and everything, and I'll just sit and meditate and I'll realize God. You know what? I'm just going to be like Buddha. I'm going to sit on my chair and meditate until I realize God. You feel the effort in all that? You feel the crazy making of all that? Makes my stomach uptight just to talk to you about that. But do you realize that's how most spiritual people proceed with a quote-unquote spiritual path? They're trying to become something. So don't stress yourself out. Every time you feel stress, realize it's because you're in the full self, okay? That's such an easy, easy reference point. When you're unhappy, when you're stressed out, when you're rushed, oppressed, irritated, off-center, you're in the mind. You're caught up in that ego mind, in that nonsense. But that's not who you are. Oh, no. You are the eternal one. You are immortal life. You are all-knowing. You are omnipresent. And you are all-pervasive, ever-expanding love. Love is the only reality in highest truth. The very planets are upheld by love. Love orders all of the cycles of nature. Love indwells every cell of your being. And you know what? When you're in that state of loving, your body lasts longer. You look more youthful. Even the physical laws of nature, which always are impermanent and always in the state of decline, you can even affect them. Think of the number of saints, particularly in the Catholic faith. that have immortalized their bodies, but also in India. Yogananda, they kept his body under observation for a whole month here in Forest Lawn, Los Angeles area, and it never showed the slightest sign of decomposition after a whole month. And Yogananda was an avatar of divine love. Every pore of his being emanated the love of God, the devotion of God. Go look at his eyes for a while if you want to wake up, if you want to enter the next dimension. Yeah. Now, that's not to say that great saints that die and get old looking and their bodies fall apart, that's not because they are less in their enlightenment. It's for other reasons, generally, because they're just not very attached to bodily identity, and they let nature take its course. So you cannot look from the outside and judge. Some saints are real wacky. I mean, you go and you get all confused because they may be smoking and eating meat and looking like they're really caught up in the world. But you have no idea what's going on in that consciousness. They may be so far away from the identification with physical bodies and physical dream scenarios that it would astound you if you could peek into that consciousness. But you can't. You see, you can't awaken by getting into another person's consciousness. You have to awaken from within your own consciousness. So the only proper study of God is to study and know yourself. Know every nuance of yourself so you can identify the unhappy self, the false self, the dreaming self, the becoming self, the frantic, stressed out self. You got to wade through all of those false identities. You know, you're not going to be exempt. We've all had to do it. We are all doing it. We don't get over it as long as we're here. We keep sifting through the stuff. But how simple can it be to accept the truth and let the false go by? Don't grab onto it and try to, oh my gosh, where did this come from? I've got to fix it. I need therapy. I better go see a psychiatrist. Quit it. That is so silly. That is that nonsense, unhappy story that the ego mind suggests that you buy into. You don't need any of this stuff. You know, in the Course of Miracles, Jesus says that the body needs nothing. It doesn't need a special diet. It doesn't need special vitamins. It doesn't need supplements. It doesn't need special exercises. It needs nothing. No thing. It doesn't have any feeling. It's inert. I'm quoting Jesus. It's inert. And he said, the one thing you have never done is completely forget the body, completely lose sight of it. That's true. I mean, most of our bodies, when we get past a certain age, hurt so much, it's hard to lose sight of them. Let's be practical here. So what do you do when everything in your body hurts from head to toe and you can hardly walk across the room? Well, you don't make a big deal out of it, okay? You realize you are not the body. The pain comes from the mind. The pain is remembered an expectation of former pain and the fear, of course, of feeling it again. So you set up this thought form. It's like, oh, when I get up, this is going to hurt. When I get up, it's going to be hard to walk. Or whatever. It's another one of those stories we tell ourselves. So these great, great masters who are awakened, which is each one of us in the process of awakening, they just don't mind that stuff too much. They don't pay a lot of attention to it. It's like, yeah, this is the realm of impermanence. Things break down, things die, things merge back into the elements from which they came. Don't make any big deal out of it. Things wear out here, including bodies. Because they identify with that self that is absolutely changeless, changeless being. Hard for us to even grok that. But this is where you have to accept by faith the Mahavakyas, the great statements of these enlightened men and women, and hang your hat there, and your identity there, and your belief there, until you can gain the direct experience yourself where you'll have no more doubt. So you've had all the experience you need. You don't need to take more workshops, go run after more gurus, do more of whatever it is you do to try to awaken. Because if you haven't awakened doing that stuff, chances are that's not the practice for you. Maybe you'd be better off letting off all of these becoming strategies, all of these whatever it is that we try to do, which Sai Baba said, by the way. He said all of the mental imagining and visioning and all of that stuff is just mental games. They're just mind games. You know, all these trying to open up your third eye and visualizing your chakras and all that stuff. They're just mind games. Even the practice that we have of soul travel, if all you do it is following a guided meditation, it's just more mood making, just more mind games. And you think you're making progress because you can sit for 5 minutes and chant a mantra. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, I've spent 45 years chanting a mantra, a little longer than that, chanting my mantra and meditating every single day of my life for at least 2 hours. But did that do anything for me? I don't know. One day I just woke up, and it had nothing to do with doing any spiritual practice. Maybe it was a cumulative effect of my intent, my intention and the intensity of my intention to know God. So I'm not saying this is wrong or bad or anything, but you have to look very practically that you're not depending on a process to get you there, or a person. Yeah, you all need a guide. We all need a teacher. But the teacher is the happiest when you have outgrown her or him. That's what makes them happy, when you no longer need them. So we're talking about things that you could perhaps argue with, but I'm speaking to you as a divine, full, whole being. I'm not talking to the one that thinks they're a becoming. You know, there's other talks that we give where we address that becoming self. But tonight we're talking about the authentic self that already is everything that you have ever sought to become. So experiences are always of the past. And we make ourselves miserable when we try to return to previous experience. We have a memory that we had a really high meditation or a really wonderful experience or a wonderful vision or a wonderful dream. This is all mental mood making. This is all memories of the past. So all experiences are of the mind. All of the phenomenal realms of impermanence. All of it. These experiences. What is needed is to release the past and be present now. This is your key. Be present now. Forget the past. Forget the meditation you had, you know, in a seminar by somebody, whenever. And just be with yourself with alert interest. Self-inquiry. Here and now. Here and now. What are you feeling right now? Well, if you're really, 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 really focused on what I'm saying, you're not aware of feeling. You've lost awareness of your body. You're totally present. But usually what happens is that the mind starts to wander. You listen for a while and something I said triggers a memory and the mind goes off to pursue that. And so you lose that moment, you lose that being present. Or another thing that happens, you'll think, oh, I wonder if I turned the stove off. I wonder, gosh, did I phone so-and-so? Golly, I wonder if this will be over in time. I can still get to the store. You see? So you're not present where your body is. You're present where your mind is. So where are you right now? And you might say, well, I'm listening to you. But are you really? Are you really? How present are you when you do things like sweep the floor, cut vegetables, prepare meals, wash the car, walk the dog? These are all yogas. Yoga means to be yoked with the divine. So you have to just be present with your action, because spirit is 100% now. The minute you step out of here and now, you have created a false separation that does not exist. Right now, I want you to be aware that you live inside God. I had a vision where Sai Baba showed me his head. He had this ginormous head, and everything was inside him. Literally, everyone is inside Sai Baba all the time, because his aura extends throughout the planet and the subtle fields around the earth and into the cosmos itself, because he's a cosmic avatar. So you can't get away from him. When I say Sai Baba, we could substitute the word God, but I have a very, very tangible, visible experience of God, having been with Sai Baba all of these years. So God, to me, is very, very tangible and very, very real, and I have no doubt that everything they said about Jesus Christ, all the miracles, were true, because I've seen Sai Baba do so many of them himself. And others in India. It was a surprise to me. I came to India without knowledge of these things at all. But, it's all real. It's really, really, really real. And what I do know is that he gave me everything. Or should we say, he called forth everything that was already within me that I couldn't recognize. But he gave it all. So realize that whatever the name and the form of God that you love and worship, or not, maybe you see God as life force or whatever, it doesn't matter. Just imagine the source energy is permeating right where you sit, right where you are. You can't get out of God. You're in this ocean of consciousness, this divine love, this divine life. You're swimming like a fish. Like Sai Baba said, that all of life is in the ocean of love and mercy. In Sanskrit, it's called Karuna Sagara. Isn't that beautiful? Karuna Sagara. Sea of mercy, compassion. And we rise up like little waves and think we're hot stuff and we're all separate and we're this and we're that. And then we merge back into that Satchitananda, that bliss. And we don't lose ourselves in it. What happens is that we become the ocean. Instead of identifying as the wave, we become the ocean. He said, before you came to Sai Baba, I'm quoting him, before you came to Swami, calls himself Swami, you were in the ocean, but you had like a, you were in a bag. You were encapsulated in a bag, like a plastic bag, and you weren't aware that you were in the ocean. After you come to me, you're in the ocean, but without the bag. You are aware you are in the ocean. And so when he says, when you come to Swami, Swami means teacher in Sanskrit, when you come to the teacher, the universal master, you come, you don't have to go to the body. I mean, Sai Baba is not his body. That's the big illusion. When he was physically walking in Puttaparthi, people would get caught up in the maya of the form, and they'd think, oh, well, that's Sai Baba. He has that name. He wears that orange robe. He has that halo of, that afro-looking halo of black hair. He lives in Puttaparthi. I have to go and see him physically. Well, if you do, that's fantastic. If he's called you to his physical presence, that's great. But he's everywhere. He's right where you are right now. And you come to him by your intention to be near and dear to God. There's a homing instinct in us. It's built in. There's a homing instinct that automatically draws us home. And it starts out with a longing for God, a longing to find out, who am I? Why am I here? What's my, what, you know, what am I doing here? Where did I come from? Who created me? What happens to me when the body dies? Those are all ways that you come to God. Or you have a great desire to know the truth, or to be free. There's so many desires that draw us and to the presence of God. But it's when this world is simply not enough. It's not enough to get up and drink coffee and go to work and come home and collapse in front of the TV, save for your retirement. Good luck. I mean, it's not enough. And you know it's not enough. And when you're in that state, you're very unhappy, very unfulfilled, very satisfied. You're always unsatisfied. You're always seeking. And that's how life is lost in dreaming, and being is lost in becoming. Because you already are everything you ever sought to become. But are you living now? Are you alive now? I tell you, when all of this false identification, things that you thought were yourself, and all these labels you've put on top of yourself, when all of that falls away, you come alive to every moment, to where every moment you're just happy as a lark. You're peaceful. You're content. You don't need anything. But the mind is what suggests needs. Oh, you better take that medicine. It'll ward off whatever. Oh, you better take those vitamins. It'll make you strong. Oh, you better get your flu shot or you'll get the flu. These are all stories the mind makes up to make you feel less than divine and whole and perfect and healthy now. Does that mean you never go to a doctor? No. If you believe you're a body and you believe you're subject to disease, you better go to a doctor. We asked Sai Baba why he had the hospital. When I first went there, there was just this little tiny hospital. Now there's this huge super specialty hospital that everything is free. They don't charge for any of the heart surgeries, kidney surgeries, any surgeries. It was the first hospital in the world that didn't have an accounting department. And we asked Baba, Why did you create the hospital? And he said, because there are many people who don't have sufficient faith. They just trust God. So for those who haven't sufficient faith, there's a hospital there. You could go take the medicine. But God is the only healer. Baba said that any healing that happens to you is because you opened up in some degree to faith and God healed you. It looks like the medicine did it, the chemotherapy, the doctors, the hospitals, the whatever. But the only healer is God. And the only thing that we need to do is release our faith and give God that wiggle room. I remember one time I had a gallbladder attack when I was at Prashanthi Nilayam. And I went up to the little hospital and got some pills. Came back to my room, opened a little packet. As they put everything in little newspaper packets. And was getting ready to take the medicine when Sai Baba made the pills vanish right before my eyes. They just vanished. So I went to Darshan when he walks around and gives his blessings twice a day. And when he came to me, he looked me up from head to toe. And I kind of touched to my stomach and I said, "Hurt, Swami." And in an instant, he took the pain away. Bam, gone. So I'm just saying that it's God that does everything. And it's love that fulfills and accomplishes everything. And you are God's love in this illusion of a human form, this temporary dream of becomingness. But you already are immortal life. You already are eternal truth. You already are one with Sai Baba. You are one with Jesus Christ. You are one with Gautama Buddha. You are one with every one of the avatars that has ever walked this earth. You are one with every master. And you are the master. You are the awakened one. You are the avatar. You are God. You're not becoming God. You are God. You've always been God. You cannot not be God. You cannot not be creative intelligence. But make your intelligence creative for you here and now by just letting false things fall away. Don't make a big deal out of them. Let them fall away. You recognize them, you dismiss them. Just that simple. Recognize, dismiss. But to really get it down to where you can recognize the truth from the false, just remember that whatever has a beginning and an ending is part of the false because it's imperishable. I mean, it's perishable. It's impermanent. All impermanent phenomena is inherently false. You walk in it, you know, we're surrounded with it. You don't try to avoid it. You can't avoid it. You can't escape it. You recognize it. That's all. When Sai Baba's physical body was here, it was very hard for us not to identify God, at least for me, with the form of Sai Baba. Very, very difficult not to imagine that you were closer to Sai Baba when you were in his ashram than when you were, in America. But I came to the realization during these years, and especially now since he has left his physical body, that I'm more close to him now than I've ever been because I don't have that illusion of the physical form suggesting that he was only in that body. Now I find him and see him in everyone and everything. And every morning when I get up, I reach into this space in front of me and I take his hands to walk with him. And it's a beautiful life when you live with God and you walk with God. It's incredible. And so every morning, do that. Reach out and touch the hand of Jesus or Mother Mary or Sananda or whoever it is that you love, Amaji, Yogananda. And keep company with that beloved one. Repeat the name of that beloved one, because whenever you say the name of the Lord's form appears in your aura instantly. So if you want to constantly be in the presence of God, say the name as your mantra, and the form comes present. The name and the form. Name and the form. And instead of praying out of lack, where you identify yourself with lack, instead thank God for the very thing that you would have. Well, if you're having difficulty with your eyes, put your hands over your eyes and thank God for the gift of sight. Recognize that it's God looking through your eyes. It's a seer. have trouble hearing, put your hands over your ears. And thank God for the gift of being able to hear. If your body hurts, it looks like it's going through sickness, put your hands on your head and bless you. And thank God for the gift of good health. That is God's will for you. Want to know God's will? Is that you be exactly like Him. That you be God-like, happy, whole, full, blissful, peaceful, and all abundance. But you can't come out of into that consciousness by a state of lack. So the minute you ask for something that you've always been and always have, you're operating out of that false self with its unhappy story. You got to stop it right then and there. That's why it says in the Bible that in all things we should give praise and thanks to God. The minute you say thank you to the Lord and act as if whatever you've asked for has been given to you, because it has, it's always instant. It takes you a while sometimes to recognize it. When you pray out of that sense of gratitude, the ego has absolutely no toehold. It cannot mess with you when you're in a state of gratitude and appreciation. So don't give it any toehold. Don't give it any wiggle room. Fill your life with the presence of God, with the love of God, with the gratitude that you have to be alive. I'm suggesting that you might like to just right now thank God for the gift of life. Thank you for the gift of life. Thank you for conscious being. Thank you that I live and move and have my being in you. That there's nowhere that you are not. And this whole cosmos is your temple that I live in as your love. I am your love. I am your presence. I am the one beloved. And my very breath is sustained by your love. So everything is God, for God is love. And that is the immortal reality and truth, that when you fully awaken to that part of yourself, I wouldn't even say the part of yourself, that's the wholeness of the self. When that is awakened, you are truly alive. And every single experience that you have out of that aliveness is sheer bliss and love. And you're just happy and content in that state of fullness and beingness, where you don't reach or cling or avoid or deny. You simply flow, moment by moment, in the ease of being present as love. That's the big secret. Simply be present in the moment and love. So, I hope this has been helpful to you. It's a wonderful life. Don't complicate it with nonsense. Unhappy stories and false images of who you think you are. Take Sai Baba's word for it. You are immortal being. You are immortal all-knowingness. You are immortal bliss. And come alive in that place in which you are fully God. Let's chant three nice Anai Hues as we close our show tonight. Deep breath. Anai Hues. that you would like, state with me. My holiness blesses the world. Your holiness also blesses me. God bless you. Grace and light and love surround each of you and pour through you wherever you are. Good night and namaste.